Ever since sundown tonight, at least 75% of the population has felt a vague, unspoken itch. A kind of bite of the soul. I hope I'm not confusing you. The Midwestern term bite means that little feeling that you feel when you reach down and embarrass everyone by scratching. That's called, I got a bite, Ma. Yes, there's been the bite of the soul ever since sundown tonight. And small wonder. Have you looked at the moon tonight? It doesn't surprise anyone who's a moon fan to know that the Russians exploded a super bomb today. It's the full of the moon. And anything else that might occur wouldn't surprise anyone who is a student of that strange phenomenon. The tug, the terrible, terrible ties that man feels to that movement of that small body swinging out in space there, clinging to us, a veritable satellite, and who can certainly... Has it ever occurred to you that the moon is just nothing but a toady to the earth, hangs out there, doesn't earn its own living, just clings? But let me tell you, any good cop knows for sure that this is the time to beware. You don't worry about the Ides of March, you big fat day that moon is hanging out there, that full moon. No wonder you've been feeling an itch down there near the bottom of your soul. Scratch it, man. Go ahead and scratch it. Nobody's going to look because they're all going to be busy scratching themselves one way or another. Yes, it is a night for evil portents, disasters, and wild, unspeakable loves. And sweep you away on a long, nameless tide of emotion down to the sea of eternity. Oh, look at that moon. One time I'm working out in the Midwest when television had first taken hold, its deadly, deadly, vaporous, ephemeral hold on the wills of the population. And everyone at that time was clinging to the Milton Berle myth. It was Milton Berle night. No one went out, you know. You probably don't remember even those early days. Do you know that in early days of television, when Milton Berle came on Tuesday night, all over the country, everything stopped. It really did. Strange sense of power this must have given the man. Yeah, the cab drivers hardly had any business. The train slowed up. Everything's kind of began to limp. And the population was all focused on one thing, this clown. Well, I remember one night, a funny thing happened. Milton Berle was on one night, and it was also the night of a full moon. One and the same time. And the only people, you know, who had escaped Milton Berle were those poor, sad souls who somehow, some way or another, had gotten himself tossed off by civilization. You know, walking among us tonight, as has been the case since time immemorial, are thousands, millions of people who, for some reason or other, haven't gotten on the A-train of civilization. Yeah, that old train rushing on down to the Battery. Somehow they missed the train. The door is closed and they're eternally standing on the platform. One train after another goes by, and the one that has the number they're waiting for never comes. And if the secret were out, they don't have a number. They don't even have a train that they're waiting for. They're just standing on the platform there. Well, when Milton Berle would come on Tuesday nights, the only people who would be wandering about the streets were those poor, sad, non-train catchers among us. And I can remember a police captain calling me one night. He says, and it was Tuesday night, I was working in this television station. He called me, he says, Shepard. I said, yeah. He says, Burl's on tonight, isn't he? I said, yeah, yeah. He says, I reckon you're on standby, aren't you? I says, yeah. I was in with the police force in that town. Here I'm out with them. He says, yep, I'm on standby. He wonderful shepherd. I will tell you one thing, he says. You keep those newsroom phones open. I said, why? He says, well, Burl is on tonight. And usually the only people we see out at night when Burl is on are those people who somehow missed the hanging strap of the streetcar of life. He says, and ordinarily we know how to handle it. But there's a full moon tonight. Well, just keep them phone lines open. And sure enough, not more than 10 minutes after Burl got underway, the newsroom phone began to ring. Headquarters calling. There was an axe murder. There was a man who ran amok with a shotgun, killed his wife, his mother-in-law, 3 children, and then went down and just for good measure shot the guy in the corner who sold him his newspapers. Some long forgotten, barely understood slight. 20 minutes went by, and it seems that there was one of the strangest crimes I've ever heard of. A man forced 3 people to hang themselves in a wood outside of town. Yes. It was the full moon. Now just take a look out that window, and you'll see the fullest, big old, fattest moon that you've seen in a long time. Just sitting out there. Looking down. Now, I'll tell you something about that big old fat full moon. I remember one time one of the television stations out in the Midwest, of course, they were fully cognizant of the fact that people had gotten hooked on this flickering electronic ghost that marched through their living room every night. Ah, yes. Yes, indeed, Harold. There are more things under the sun, Horatio, than thou wouldst ever dream. And those poor flickering shadows, the I Love Lucy's of the past, forgotten, tired, sad TV seasons, the lost ghosts of thespians who paraded across the cracked cheese stage, all lost and gone now. The forgotten Jerry Lesters and the Dagmars. Yeah. Unsung heroes, unsung sacrifices to the vast, yawning, cavernous mouth, the maw, if you please. I'm not talking about you, maw. There's several meanings to the word maw. Interesting that the word for mother also is the word for maw. Look it up. You'll find it interesting, that word, M-A-W. Maw, the yawning, cavernous, engulfing mouth. That insatiable public. As H.L. Mencken said, I don't let them fool me. He says, they dig me because I'm putting on a good show, but I know the minute I turn my back and somebody puts on a better show, they'll forget me. Yeah, that's right. That is indeed right. And this television station, knowing full well that the public was already mainlining fantasy, did what I thought one of the boldest strokes of television programming, and certainly it was low budget. But what a scope. What perspective. One night, about 11:30, they took their Zumar lens and they pointed it out of a window. Yeah, they just pointed it out of a window, and that great big fat old October moon was hanging right over the big inverted bowl of the Midwest. Dark as old velvet that night. And they just zoomed in and let her hang there. And that moon hung there for a full half hour. And there wasn't a single word spoken. Once in a while, it would be just the slightest hint, just below the level of perception on the audio side. There would be just the slightest hint of maybe Vivaldi or someone. And the people just sat and looked at that moon, coming out of that giant 17-inch life-size set in the corner there. And they just sat and looked and looked. And I remember what happened. After about the first 3 minutes of the program, people couldn't believe it, what they were seeing on their television screen. After Dagmar, Jerry Lester, I Love Lucy. Suddenly there's that big fat old thing. It was the moon, and the moon was moving right across the screen. They let it move, you see. And they had set up the camera so that the moon started up in the upper left-hand corner of that screen, had just slowly moved across. And by the end of the half hour, was just beginning to disappear out the other side. And then they followed it up with a card, said, if you want to see the rest of the show, go out on your porch and look up. And everybody did. Biggest TV star that ever hit that Midwestern screen. And you know, I'd like to tell you something about October moons. You don't see them here in New York, really, because we got all kinds of problems with the landscape. It sticks up in the air. Oh, yeah. But there is such a thing as an October moon, and I suppose you think this is merely the result of imagination on the part of writers. No. Do you know what is it, the October moon, and do you know why it looks the way it does? Just give me a moment, and you can get back to your poor little workaday pursuits. The reason there is such a thing as the October moon is because we are now going through a change in the weather, a great sweeping change, but the earth remains warm while the upper atmosphere is cold. Now, ordinarily, the millions of particles and the tiny bits of fluff and pieces of cloth and fingernail filings and chewed cabbage and one thing and another that's in the air is generally swept away. But because of this great vast sandwich of air that remains unmovable, the moon is filtered through this strangely varied temperatured sandwich, this ice cream sandwich, until the colors are changed and the size of the moon gets lopped and moved over and pushed and squashed like a great big tennis ball caught in a vise, until finally the moon gets to be a thing that you don't even recognize as a moon. I remember one time, speaking of October moons, and again, I might say that the October moon is particularly noticeable in the plain states. You see, you have the sea here. That changes everything. But I cannot describe to you how the moon looks in Indiana. At this time of the year, the last 2 weeks of October, how the moon looks in Indiana, I'd say about 9, 10 o'clock at night. It's fantastic. And sometimes the moon would come peeking up over the edge, just the rim of the earth, and the moon would cover three-quarters sometimes, almost three-quarters, you can't imagine it, of the horizon. Unbelievable. It looked like that moon was just about to land over there in Lake County, just on the other side of the Kankakee River. Of course, it never did, but the people are still hoping. They figured they'd have themselves one whopping tourist attraction if they could ever capture the moon. Lay it down there and hook it up and somehow get the crowd to really come out to that big old county fair. For 1 week only, the moon. Special added attraction. Speaking of fantasies, this is WORAM and FM New York. And speaking of fantasy.
But the TNT, the lessons we did, that's who.
Shouldn't that be whom?
Who, whom, whatever. The main thing is we put the TNT listings.
Who's we?
Well, all the guys down at the office.
Well, who's all the guys?
Oh, the weather outside is snowing.
But you'll get where you're going.
With General Tire winter cleats. Let it snow, let it snow, let it snow.
Your car will stay in action.
With General's positive traction.
Get General Tire winter cleats.
Let it snow, let it snow, let it snow.
For immediate stop and go, get the tire with a positive grip.
Off you go through the slush and snow.
Safe and sure every mile of your trip.
Put winter cleats on your car.
You'll drive a safe and sure car
with General Tire winter cleats. Let it snow, let it snow. Get General Tire winter cleats. You'll go.
Slowly, silently, now the moon walks the night in her silver shoon. This way and that, she peers and sees silver fruit upon silver trees. One by one, the casements catch her beams beneath the silvery thatch. Couched in his kennel, like a log with paws of silver, sleeps the dog. From their shadowy coat, the white breasts peep of doves in a silver-feathered sleep. A harvest mouse goes scampering by with silver claws and silver eye, and moveless fish in the water gleam by silver reeds in a silver stream. A balloon coming out of a keen city in the sky, filled with pretty people. And if you and I should get into it, if they should take me and take you into their balloon, why then we'd go up higher with all the pretty people than houses and steeples and clouds. Go sailing. Away and away, sailing into a keen city which nobody's ever visited, where always it's spring and everyone's in love. And flowers pick themselves. Written in letters most plain, you may hack me in slices, but I'll grow again. I seized it and sliced it and made no mistake, as with dough rounded over, I put it in to bake. But soon in the garden, as I chanced to walk, why, there was that pumpkin again, entire on its stalk. Heard a lady this night, lissom and gimp and slim, calling me. calling me over the heather, neath the beech boughs, dusk and dim. I followed a lady this night, followed her far, alone. Fox and adder and weasel know the ways that we have gone. I sit at my supper midst honest faces and crumble my crust and say naught in the long-drawn drawing of the voices talking the hours away. I'll go to my chamber under the gable and the moon will lift her light in at my lattice from over the moorland, hollow and still and bright. And I know she will shine on a lady of witchcraft, gladness and grief to see, who has taken my heart with her nimble fingers, calls in my dreams to me, who has led me a dance by dell and dingle, my human soul to win, made me a changeling to my own mother, a stranger to my kin. Who knows? If the moans of a loon coming out of a keen city in the sky filled with pretty people, who knows? And if you and I should get into it, if they should take me and take you into their balloon, why then we'd go up higher with all the pretty people and houses and steeples and clouds. Go sailing, away and away, sailing into a keen city which nobody's ever visited, where always it's spring. And everyone's in love. And flowers pick themselves.
Oink. Tarp. Rar. Vin. Car.
Is there anything? Asked the goblin. You would like for yourself? Should you like a little pony or a gold ring? Asked the elf. Should you like a jeweled bird or a pair of magic shoes? I like your looks extremely. And you have only to choose. But Sarah very wisely kept walking down the path. She fixed her eyes upon the ferns. She would not look to see where step by step beside her walked the little gentleman with a feathered cap upon his head and buckles at his knee. But still his voice came coaxingly. Pretty child like you must surely know a thousand things that she'd like to do. Should you care to dance with a fairy prince? Or see the stars at play? I like your looks extremely. And you only have to say. Sarah very wisely said nothing in reply. She saw the house beyond the woods with her mother at the door. And walked a little faster. Till soon she walked alone. But those pretty, foolish questions Sarah heard forevermore. Sort of wheels go round. They were the hugest kind of wheels. And they made a pleasant sort of sound. It was a gaily lighted place with many windows near the top. The wheels kept going round and round. It didn't seem as if they'd ever stop. It was the strangest sort of house, all full of numbers set in glass. Thoughtful men, all dressed in blue and shining dials and things of brass. I walked up to a man in blue. I stopped the man in blue and I said, "What makes the shining wheels go round?" Farmer shook his snowy head. What makes the shiny wheels go round? I asked the oldest man in blue. He took a piece of chalk he had and wrote a number, bright and new. He brought a little book he had. He took the book, and in it he read, what makes the shining wheels go round? The wheel go rounding one is dead. The wheel go rounding one is dead. I took the little book, and oh, I found myself all dressed in blue. And as I looked, my hair turned to snow. I was angry with my friend. I told my wrath. My wrath did end. I was angry with my foe. I told it not. My wrath did grow. And I watered it in fears, night and morning with my tears. And I sunned it with smiles and with soft, deceitful wiles. And it grew both day and night, till it bore an apple bright. And my foe beheld it shine. And he knew that it was mine. And into my garden stole when the night had veiled the pole. And in the morning I was glad to see my foe outstretched beneath the tree. Old Adam the carrion crow, the old crow of Cairo, he sat in the shower. And let it flow under his tail and over his crest, and through every feather leaped the wet weather. And the bough swung under his nest, for his beak, it was heavy with marrow. Is that the wind dying? Oh, no. It's only two devils that blow through a murderer's bones, to and fro, in the gulf. In the ghost's moonshine. Oh, Eve, my gray carrion wife, when we have supped on king's marrow, where shall we drink and make merry our life? Our nest, it is Queen Cleopatra's skull. 'Tis cloven and cracked and battered and hacked, but with tears of blue eyes it is full. Let us drink that, my raven of Cairo. Sent the wind dying? Oh, no. It's only two devils that blow through a murderer's bones to and fro in the ghost's moonshine. Boys, clear the track. The witches are here. They've all come back. They hanged him high. No use, no use. What cares a witch for the hangman's noose? They buried them deep, but they wouldn't lie still. For cats and witches are hard to kill. They swore they shouldn't and wouldn't die. Book said they did, but they lie. They lie. Eeny, meeny, miny, mo, crack-a-feeny, finey-fo, Uma Nuja. Upa Tuja, Rick Bick Bando, Eeny Meeny Miny Mo, All the children in a row. Cracafini, who is he counting up so solemnly? Eeny, meeny, look how tall, like a shadow on the wall. When did he come down the street, muffled up from head to feet? Listen, listen. Don't you hear the shiny shadow man count? Meeny, miny. Hush. When all the counting's done, maybe I might be the one. Cracafini, finey fool, watches shining fingers go. He can see enough to play, though he hides his face away. Apatuja, Rip Van, Bick. Another solemn counting man. 40-11 from the top. Now where will his fingers stop? Eeny, meeny, miny, mo, crack-a-feeny, finey, fo, Uma, Nuja, Upa, Tuja, Rip, Bick, Van, Do. Watchdogs howl, comes forth in search of food, the snowy, mystic owl. His soft, white, ghostly wings beat noiselessly the air, like some lost soul that hopelessly is mute in its despair. But now his hollow note rings cheerless through the glade. O'er the silent moat he flits from shade to shade. He hovers, swoops, and glides o'er meadows, moors, and streams. He seems to be some fantasy, a ghostly bird of dreams. What dost thou haunt this night? Why dost thou love the moon when other birds delight to sing their joy at noon? Art thou then crazed with love, or is it for some fell crime that thou flits covertly at this unholy time? There was an old wife, and she lived all alone in a cottage not far from Hitchin. And one bright night, by the full moonlight, comes a ghost right into her kitchen. About that kitchen, neat and clean, the ghost goes pottering about, and the poor old wife is deaf as a boot, and so hears never a sound. The ghost blows up the kitchen fire, as bold can be. He helps himself from the larder shelf, but never a sound hears she. He blows on his hands to make them warm, and whistles aloud, but still as a sack the old soul lies, and never a sound hears she. From corner to corner he runs about, and into the cupboard he peeps. He rattles the door and bumps on the floor, but still. The old wife sleeps. Jangle and bang go the pots and the pans as he throws them all around. And the plates and mugs and dishes and jugs, he flings them all to the ground. Madly, the ghost tears up and down and screams like a storm at sea. And at last, the old wife stirs in her bed. And it's, "Drat those mice," says she. Then the first crock crows, and morning shows, and the troublesome ghost away. And oh, what a pickle the poor wife sees when she gets up next day. Them's tidy big mice, the old wife thinks. And off she goes to Hitchin, and a tidy big cat she fetches back to keep the mice from her kitchen. As I was going by moonlight up the wooden stairs to bed, stood 24 coppers with helmets blue upon each copper's head. Good night to all, I said. But they answered, wait a bit. Now, where are you going by candlelight? Just give an account of it. I said, I'm going upstairs to bed. I'm going upstairs to bed. Policeman, if you please. They said, now don't you get up in the night asking for bread and cheese. Don't you come down before the sun to run on the long, wet grass. If you see that none of these things are done, young fellow, you may pass. So I went up the stairs by candlelight, up the wooden stairs to bed, past 24 coppers with helmets blue upon each copper's head. I think if I should wait some night in an enchanted forest with tall, dim hemlocks and moss-covered branches and quiet, shadowy aisles between the tall, blue lichen trees with low shrubs forming grotesque outlines in the moonlight, and the moon covered with a thick carpet of pine needles so that my footsteps made no sound, they would not be afraid to glide gently from their hiding places to the white patch of moonlight on the pine needles and dance to the moon and the stars and the wind. Their arms would gleam white in the moonlight, and a thousand dewdrops sparkle in the dimness of their hair. But I should not dare to look at their wildly beautiful faces. A speck went blowing up against the sky as little as a leaf. And then it drew near, and it broadened. It's a bird, said I, and fetched my bows and arrows. Oh, it was queer. It grew up from a speck to a blot and squattered past a cloud. And then it flew down, all crumbly, and waggled such a lot I thought the thing would fall. It was a brown old carpet where a man was sitting snug, who, when he reached the ground, began to sew a big hole in the middle of the rug. And kept on peeping everywhere to know who might be coming. Then he gave a twist and flew away. I fired at him, but missed. Who would be a merman bold, sitting alone, singing alone, under the sea, with a crown of gold on a throne? I would be a merman bold. I would sit and sing the whole of the day. I would fill the sea halls with a voice of power. Oh, but at night, I would roam abroad and play with the mermaids, in and out of the rocks, dressing their hair with the white sea flower and holding them back by their flowing locks. I would kiss them often under the sea and kiss them again till they kissed me, laughingly, laughingly. And then we would wander away, away, to the pale green sea groves, straight and high, chasing each other merrily. There would be neither moon nor star, but the wave would make music above us, afar. Low thunder and light in the magic night. Neither moon nor star. We would call aloud in the dreamy dells. call to each other and whoop and cry all night, merrily, merrily. They would pelt me with starry spangles and shells, laughing and clapping their hands between all night, merrily, merrily. But I would throw to them back in mine turquoise and agate and almondine. Then leaping out upon them unseen, I would kiss them often under the sea and kiss them again till they kissed me laughingly, laughingly. Oh, what a happy life were mine under the hollow-hung ocean green. Soft are the moss beds under the sea. We would live merrily, merrily. Slowly, slowly, silently, now the moon walks the night in her silver shoon. This way and that, she peers and sees silver fruit upon silver trees. One by one, the casements catch her beams beneath the silvery thatch. Crouched in his kennel like a log with paws of silver, sleeps the dog. From their shadowy coat, the white breasts peep of doves in a silver-feathered sleep. A harvest mouse goes scampering by with silver claws and silver eye. And moveless fish in the water gleam by silver reeds in a silver stream. Thank you.